620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Howdy, everyone, and welcome to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, and this is the Russ Belville Show, the home of truly radical progressives. We're broadcasting from our flagship studios, AM 620 KPOJ, right here in the Rose City, Portland, Oregon. We're streaming online at 620kpoj.com and blogging at radicalrust.net. If you want to get involved, give me a call at 1-866-5577-377. And it's quite a weekend this weekend. Today on the Russ Belville Show, we're going to be celebrating Mother's Day. That's right, this weekend is Mother's Day. How many of you out there forgot that tomorrow is Mother's Day? Well, you better get to the florist. You better get to the candy shop. Your time is running out. So we're celebrating Mother's Day today. Also today, May 12th, just happens to be my youngest brother's birthday. So happy birthday to my brother Joshua out there, who's just turned 24 years old.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, President Bush says happy birthday to
you. Happy birthday.
That's very nice of you, Mr. President. And so happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And remember, all of us have mothers that love us. Even the worst criminal scumbag, the biggest thief, and the most reprehensible traitor in the world has a good, kind, and decent mother that loves him. But not all of us get the chance to say what we need to say when we need to say it on Mother's Day. So take that chance this weekend and get a hold of your mom. Give her a call. Talk to mom. Go visit if you get a chance. You know, a lot of people don't get that chance anymore. So just remember that. And happy Mother's Day to Barbara Bush, too. Nice to, you know, we're going to be kind here at the Russ Belville Show. We have no ill will or animosity toward our opponents. We just think they're wrong.
So many of the people in the arenas here, you know, we're underprivileged anyway. This is working very roughly.
Okay. So maybe Barbara Bush isn't good, kind, and decent. But hey, happy Mother's Day to her anyway. and for that matter, happy Mother's Day out there to Laura Bush. She deserves a little bit of celebration and attention for all the suffering she's gone through having to watch the Iraq war on TV.
And believe me, no one suffers more than their president. And I do when we watch this.
I know, poor Laura, having to watch the war. That's such a shame. You know, well, you know, I'm thinking that perhaps maybe a mother like Cindy Sheehan, or maybe one of the other 3,386 mothers whose kids died in your husband's war, they might be suffering just a teensy bit more there, Laura. But well, happy Mother's Day to you anyway, and thank you for raising such fine daughters in Jenna and Barbara, who are, you know, a fine example of a fine example of something, I'm sure. Anyway, we're also going to be talking about the GOP candidates. We're looking at the red team today on the Russ Belville Show. They had a debate just recently, and that was very interesting. They had this really great question that we're going to talk about with the GOP folks.
I'm curious, is there anybody on the stage that does not agree in believe in evolution?
We got to ask the candidates whether or not they believe in evolution. I understand some of the other questions included, do you believe in the theory of gravity, and do you believe the Earth revolves around the sun? So we'll be checking that out. We're going to have a conversation about those 10 GOP presidential hopefuls who are, I've divided them into three categories. There's the Whodats, the Guano Locos, and the flip-floppers. So we'll take a look at all those groups, all 10 of them. And what I'd like to know today is, who is your favorite Republican candidate? I know, this is the Russ Belville Show. We're in a progressive talk here, but we can talk about the other team, can't we? Who is your favorite Republican candidate? And by favorite, I mean, who do you most want to see nominated? Because even the Democrats couldn't find a way to lose to the guy. So that's what we're looking for. Oh, sorry. Senator McCain, we're going to get back to you a little bit later. We'll talk about your precious, precious presidency a little bit later. But, of course, we're also going to be fair here. We're going to look at both sides. We're also going to be looking at the Democratic side, the eight candidates on the Democratic side. And we're going to be celebrating also here at the Russ Belville Show some landmark legislation here in my adopted home state of Oregon, the signing of somewhat kind of sort of equal rights for gay and lesbian people. So
I feel pretty.
Yes.
Oh, so pretty.
So pretty.
I feel pretty and witty and gay, and I pity any girl who's in me today.
Ah, yes, it's a good day to be a lesbian in the state of Oregon, or a gay man for that matter, as we just enacted two bills, one that is going to guarantee domestic partnerships, making us allied with Washington and California. The whole West Coast now is a good place, or at least a better place, to be a gay or lesbian American. Also, we enacted anti-discrimination against gays and lesbians in housing and in the job market and workplace discrimination. So it is a good day to be an Oregonian, but we're also going to look at why can't our Democratic candidates come out a little stronger for the gay rights issues. That's what I want to know. That's all coming up today on the Russ Belville Show. We'll be taking your calls later at 866-5577-377. This is your weekend escape from predictable talk radio and the home of truly radical progressives. Are you a first-time caller? Well, don't be nervous. I'm a first-time host. We don't have the budget for spin here, so you're going to get nothing but common sense and the truth. Hit it!
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by.
That's right. It's Mother's Day here at the Russ Belville Show. We're celebrating all mothers, and we're going to take a look here at the history a little bit of Mother's Day, because it's really, really appropriate this holiday during this time where our soldiers are off at war in the Iraq quagmire and Ifergotistan. While our soldiers are out there fighting for our freedoms, I suppose, we'd like to remember that Mother's Day, the holiday of Mother's Day, is originally a call for peace. That's right. Mother's Day was founded the movement was begun by a woman named Julia Ward Howe. Julia Ward Howe lived in the 19th century, died in 1910, and she was a prominent abolitionist. She was against the spread of slavery, a social activist. She fought for women's suffrage, the women's right to vote. She was a noted pacifist, and strangely enough, one of the little trivia items about her is she was the author of the Battle Hymn of the Republic, the Glory, Glory, Hallelujah song. So we'll be listening to that a little later, too, when we start talking about Mitt Romney. But let's not get ahead of ourselves here. Julia Ward Howe, she wrote this Mother's Day proclamation in 1870. This was all the way back in 1870 as a call for peace and disarmament. See, in 1870, we're talking about Reconstruction, the war between the states. The Civil War had ended just 5 years earlier. They still had many wounds, open wounds to heal between the North and the South. Families were still divided. And so Julia Ward Howe wrote this proclamation in order to bring people together in the cause for peace and disarmament, to try to get mothers of America to stop sending their boys to war, to call for an end to this needless bloodshed. And this is all the way back, we're talking all the way back in 1870, where this consciousness starts to arise. Now, since then, of course, when she did the proclamation, that also influenced some other women, prominent women, to take up the cause. The next one to take up the cause was a woman named Ann Jarvis, who was working again between Union and Confederate families, trying to get them reunited during Reconstruction. Her daughter, Anna Jarvis, was the person who began the crusade for the National Mother's Day. Now, the first Mother's Day was taking place at Grafton, West Virginia, back in 1908. This is Anna Jarvis again, who started that, and that was the first town she was able to get the proclamation signed in. And from 1908 all the way to 1914, it only took 6 years before Woodrow Wilson, President Wilson, was signing in the National Mother's Day holiday. And the specific purpose of the Mother's Day proclamation for the national holiday was so that we would show the flag to honor mothers who have lost a son in the war. So you know, when we're looking at, you know, we're hearing all of these ads to go buy mom flowers and go get her candies and all this, it's that's just the rampant commercialization that's taken place. This holiday, this day is really a day of remembrance and a day of honor for the mothers, the Gold Star mothers especially out there, who've lost a son, who've lost a daughter in this immoral, illegal occupation of Iraq, just so George Bush can fulfill some of his Oedipal fantasies or Oedipal experiments, whatever you want to call them. But I want to remind everybody of that, and that when you're thinking of your mother today, I want you to think of some of the mothers out there who have lost a son or lost a daughter. And if you know some of them personally, you know, give them a shoulder to cry on, give them a voice to listen to. Let them know that you support them. And even if you disagree with this war, as I so virulently disagree with this war, we do support the troops, and we do, of course, believe in the sacrifice that these mothers have given, that their sons and daughters have given to help protect our country. I'm Russ Belville. We're talking here at the Russ Belville Show. You can give us a call right after the break at 866-5577-377. Right after the break, I'm going to read to you the official Mother's Day proclamation from 1870, so you can get a little taste of how this all came about. And, well, don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
That's right. Bienvenidos. Welcome to the weekend. It's Russ Belville, Radical Russ, on your Progressive Talk radio airwaves. Glad to have you listening. Hey, it's Mother's Day coming up. Mother's Day is tomorrow. Did you forget? I'm talking to you. Yes, I know you. You forgot, didn't you? You get out there and go get some flowers for your mother. You give your mother a call. Your mother loves you. That's right. It's Mother's Day. We all love our mothers. Everybody's got a mother. And speaking of Mother's Day, I was just talking earlier in the last segment about Julia Ward Howe. And Julia Ward Howe was this famous suffragette, pacifist, and poet. She was the one who wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. This is the Mormon Tabernacle Choir singing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Check this out. Motivational. Here's the good part. Here it is. Here it comes. I always love that part where when they start talking about the sword and the death, that's when it swells up and gets all fancy there. You know, the death and the sword and the terrible swift sword and the God of vengeance. Oh, oh well. Anyway, I prefer my hymns a little peppier than that. But anyway, that was the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and Julia Ward Howe wrote that. She wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. That's one of the things that she's well known for. But the other thing that she's known for, and maybe lesser known for, is that she started the movement for Mother's Day. And she started it with her Mother's Day proclamation back in 1870. This was a call for peace and disarmament following the Civil War, following half a million Americans, both on the North and the South sides, dying in a war. And she just wanted to gather women together, gather mothers together as part of the social movement for change, for peace, to try to remind everyone that everyone has a mother that loves them, and no mother wants to see her son die in a needless war. So I would like to read for you now just the Mother's Day Proclamation of 1870. And remember, this, of course, is Julia Ward Howe speaking, so I know I've got the male voice. But just imagine, and these words, I think, are so, so important for the times we face today. Arise, then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether our baptism be of water or of tears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands will not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We, the women of this country, will be too tender for those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. Now, this is Julia Ward Howe. She wrote this Mother's Day proclamation back in 1870, and it continues. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. That's that line right there just gets right to the heart of it, doesn't it? Disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. This wise woman, this Julia Ward Howe, back in 1870, wrote this as the start of Mother's Day. It continues. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after his own time the sacred impress not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and humanity, and this is Julia Ward Howe speaking, I earnestly ask that a General Congress of Women, without limit of nationality, be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and at the earliest period consistent with its objects, to promote the alliance of different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, and the great and general interests of peace. So think about that today during this Mother's Day, that that's what Mother's Day is all about. Disarmament and peace. Disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Let's make this Mother's Day a day that we can remember our mothers who have lost their sons or daughters in this tragic, tragic war. You know, I also want to do a little personal take on this also as well. Of course, it's Mother's Day for my mother as well. So I want to say a happy Mother's Day to my mom, who's out there in back in Nampa, Idaho. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. If it were not for her, you would not be listening to my voice on the airwaves today. Well, aside from the obvious fact that she gave birth to me. But other than that, my love of the spoken word, my love of the written word, my interest and all of my intellectual curiosity, I definitely get a lot of that from my mother. Now my mother's turning 60 this year, so this is a special year for her as well. And you know, if it wasn't for my mother, she was the one who taught me so much about the work ethic and how to be polite to people and, you know, just like anyone's mother should. And you know, I had an interesting time growing up as well because my father was a professional musician. So while we were out, when he was out playing at his gigs and playing at his concerts, even as a little kid, I can remember dancing with my mom because, of course, my mom, she would be at all the gigs and wouldn't have anyone to dance with. So she would take me and I'd be like 10, 11 years old and I'd be out there swing dancing with my mom. You know, I'll always remember that. That's a fond memory for me for Mother's Day. Another thing my mom did, this is definitely something that'll warp a child's mind. She turned me on my love of reading, and most specifically she turned me on to the author Robert A. Heinlein, the great science fiction author who wrote Time Enough for Love and Stranger in a Strange Land is probably his best known book. So there I am, 10, 11 years old, reading some pretty adult science fiction. If you've ever read Time Enough for Love or Stranger in a Strange Land, you'll know that's probably not something you'd give your average 10-year-old. And well, maybe that's kind of what led to the radicalism that you got here on the radio today. You know, moms are the greatest, and I really encourage everyone, give your mom a call, you know, get over to her house if you're nearby, if your mother's still with you, you know, show your love for mom. You know, mom gives so much, and sometimes she just doesn't get the recognition she should. I remember my mom going to all those awful plays of mine when I was a kid, when I was just starting out in drama, and those beginning band concerts when I was playing clarinet. Oh, if you haven't heard someone play clarinet badly, then you don't know how much that woman suffered. So anyway, happy Mother's Day to mom, all the moms out there. I want to dedicate today's show to my mother and to all mothers, but especially those mothers in America, Britain, Afghanistan, and Iraq who are mourning the loss of their sons and daughters in George W. Bush's insane war. 3,387 American moms gave to our country the ultimate sacrifice, the lives of their children. And let's remember today the original meaning of Mother's Day. Let's remember those words of Julia Ward Howe. Disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. End this war, George W. Bush. Bring home our troops, Senator Reed. Not one more damn dime for occupation. I'm Radical Russ.
AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
It's time for Radical Russ's non sequitur of the week.
Has anyone else seen this commercial from KFC? They're pushing this unholy bucket of beige, white, and yellow carbohydrate chowder called KFC Famous Bowls. Seriously, while this classic Lynyrd Skynyrd tune plays in the background, they show this bowl of mashed potatoes, corn, chicken, cheese, gravy, and any other deep-fried calorie bomb they can cram in there, all mixed together. And people are loving it. It's KFC's bestseller. But that's not what's bugging me. As an ex-bar band musician, I gotta know, has anyone else noticed that KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken, is promoting their commercial with a song called...
And that was Radical Russ's non sequitur of the week.
You know, sometimes things just bug me and I gotta get it off my chest, and well, that just bugs me. Kentucky Fried Chicken? Sweet Home Alabama? What's wrong with this country? Can't we even find our states on a map? Oh, never mind, we probably can't. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show, the home of truly radical progressives. And we'll be taking your calls a little later at 866-5577-377. That number, once again, is 866-557-7377. And our question now, we're going to take a look at the red team. We're going to take a look at the GOP candidates for the nomination for President of the United States in 2008. And the question to you is this: which Republican of the 10 Republicans running for president now, or Tommy Thompson, or Fred Thompson, if he wants to join too, let's make it 11. Which one of these guys do you most want to see get the nomination so that the Democrats can win the presidency in 2008? Which GOP candidate is going to be our best opportunity to get a win for the Democrats in 08? And I'd like to know what you think about that. If you think it's going to be Giuliani or Romney or whoever, and not who you think's going to get the nomination, who do you want to get the nomination? Because when I look at these guys, you know, I watched the GOP debate the other week, and I saw all those candidates, and well, you know, as I evaluated each one of them with the pros and the cons and the merits of their arguments, I decided that I think that the old straight Christian white guy in the blue suit did the best. Definitely, I think the old straight Christian white guy was the best of the GOP candidates. Now, I do understand that the other old straight Christian white guy had some good points. And then that other old straight Christian white guy, well, he had some good things to say, too. But I really do think that the old straight Christian white guy is the one who's going to get the nomination. I mean, look at that stage. When you look at that stage, do you see America? I don't see America. I see a corporate board. I see the Toastmasters Club. I don't see the America that I grew up in, where we have women and minorities and oh no, gay people. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for which one of these candidates are we going to have the best chance of beating when it comes 2008 time. Now, when I look at these 10, I break them down. I like to, you know, get deep into the data here and figure out who's who. And so I've really broken these guys down into three camps. They really break down into three camps here. And the three camps are the whodats. Now, the whodats, that's the people that you hear their name and you go, who dat? So the lower tier candidates, we might say. And then there's the guano locos. The guano locos. Yeah, if you know any Spanish, you know what I'm saying there. Yes, the crazy ones, the ones that are trying so that are so far to the right that they can't even make left turns in their car. They have to make three right turns just to make a left turn. It's just amazing, these people. So we'll cover the guano locos, and also, of course, the flip floppers. You know, that was the chant back in the GOP convention with Senator Kerry, you know, about his flip flopping. But I'll tell you what, we got some major league flip-floppers on the Republican side this year. Oh my, they got nothing compared to on Senator Kerry there. So yeah. Oh yeah, that's right, we got some flip-floppers. That's right, we got some flip-floppers. We'll be taking a look at them. But let's start off with the whodats. Our first whodat in the Republican camp, taking your votes here at 866-5577-377, former Governor Jim Gilmore of Virginia. Who dat? Former Governor Jim Gilmore. I don't know a whole lot about Jim Gilmore. What I do know is he's raised a whopping $175,000 in the first quarter. $175,000. Now, we're talking about, you know, the front runners, Giuliani and McCain, you know, running in the, they're getting around $15 million, $10, $15 million. And then on the Democratic side, you know, Barack and Hillary, they're already up into the $25 million stratosphere. So here's this Jim Gilmore with his $175,000. That's the lowest of any one of the candidates except for Democrat Mike Gravel. So I think Mike Gravel and Jim Gilmore, they're going to pool their money together, and I think they're going to get a supersized meal at Wendy's and maybe go out to a movie. And after that, they might have a few dollars left over for an ad or two. So we can just cast away the who dat Jim Gilmore. Let's take a look at the other who dat in the race. Representative Ron Paul of Texas. Ron Paul of Texas. Who dat? Well, Ron Paul of Texas, he claims to be a libertarian candidate. And, boy, here at the Russ Belville Show, that's one thing, that's a big red flag when you hear that somebody's a libertarian. You know why, of course. That's, libertarian is code word for an agnostic big business Republican who doesn't mind hookers and drugs. That's pretty much what your libertarians are. That, you know, I'm with the libertarians on a lot of their social issues. They don't believe in criminalizing victimless behaviors, like, you know, the use of drugs or prostitution. Constitution or anything that's a victimless, so-called victimless crime. But, of course, when it comes to libertarians, when the rubber hits the road and they're forced to choose between individual liberties and corporate interests, well, guess who wins? Yeah, it's the corporate interest that's going to win every time. But, you know, still, Ron Paul of Texas, I got to give him some props for supporting the reintroduction of industrial hemp to America's farms. And he did vote against the Patriot Act. He voted against the Military Commissions Act. And he voted against the authorization of force in Iraq. So, you know, for a Republican, hey, that's not bad. You know, not too bad. Well, of course, also in the debate the other day, he was talking about abolishing the IRS. Well, I don't know how well the country will function without tax money. But, hey, does that mean the Pentagon might have to have a bake sale to buy a bomber? That might be worth it. That might be interesting. Well, I don't know. Out of this group of 10 people, Ron Paul, you know, if someone was holding a gun to my head and, you know, told me that every Democrat on the planet had been killed in a terrible plague and I was forced to pick a Republican with my arm twisted behind my back, I think I'd probably have to pick Ron Paul out of all of them. He would be the one I guess I'm the least scared of at this point, would be Ron Paul from Texas. Let's keep going down the list of the who dats. We got another who dat, former Governor Tommy Thompson. Now, right off the bat, I got to have a problem with someone named Tommy Thompson, you know, like Matt Matthews or Steve Stevens. I mean, that's just a little, you know, you think, come on, parents, have some creativity here. Give the kid a name he can use here. But, of course, Tommy Thompson, he can't keep his foot out of his mouth. Listen to this comment of him talking about firing gay people.
If a private employer finds homosexuality immoral, should he be allowed to fire a gay worker?
I think that is left up to the individual business. I really sincerely believe that that is a issue that business people have got to make their own determination as to whether or not they should be.
So the answer is yes.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, if a business decides it wants to discriminate, well, then that's perfectly reasonable. You know, if you want to have a lunch counter and not serve black people, that's perfectly okay. If you want to have a private club and not let women in, and well, that's okay too. And if you don't want to serve gay people, if you don't want to hire gay people, well, that's just fine by Governor Tommy Thompson. We got so much more on these GOP crop of candidates, and we'll be taking your calls after the breaks here. If you've got your favorite Republican candidate, just let me know. Which one do you think we can beat this year? I'm Radical Russ.
Radical Russ continues. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
That's right. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, bringing you truly progressive talk radio. No OxyContin required. We're talking about the GOP hopefuls. I've been breaking down the who dat. Who is that guy running for president over there in the, you know, the white guy with the blue suit? No, no, not that white guy with the blue suit. The other white guy with the blue suit. Yeah, the one we were talking about last was former Governor Tommy Thompson of Wisconsin, who just can't seem to keep his foot out of his mouth. He just got nailed by all the gay rights groups for his comments about allowing businesses to fire gay people. He thought that was just fine. Then, you know, it's up to businesses to decide who they want to discriminate against. That should be okay. Here's his other statement that just recently got him in trouble from the Religious Action Center on Reform Judaism. He was speaking to an audience there, a Jewish audience, and he said, and this is a quote from Tommy Thompson here, this is an adult man, a grown adult man running for president, who said, quote, "I'm in the private sector, and for the first time in my life, I'm earning money. You know that's sort of part of the Jewish tradition, and I do not find anything wrong with that." Yeah. Making money is part of the Jewish tradition, huh? Is that how that works, Governor? So, well, Thompson later apologized for his comments, and he said this is how he tries to get out of it. He says, "I only wanted to highlight the accomplishments of the Jewish religion." I quote, "I just wanted to clarify something because I didn't by any means want to infer or imply anything about Jews and finances and things. What I was referring to, ladies and gentlemen, is the accomplishments of the Jewish religion. You've been outstanding business people, and I compliment you for that." So that's the apology, huh? Oh. Okay, you know, I'll bet some of his best friends are Jewish. That's probably okay. So tell me what you think about these GOP candidates. I've been talking about this, and Arlene in Portland has been on the line, and she's got something to say here. What do you think of this Tommy Thompson guy, Arlene? Arlene? Oh, Arlene, we've lost Arlene. I'm so sorry about that. Well, we'll just keep on talking about the GOP candidates here. What I'm trying to figure out here is which is the one that we progressives, we liberals, want to see win? Who's the guy that we want to see get the nomination so that we can have the best chance of taking back the White House in 2008? You know, the way I'm seeing the political landscape right now, I just think that it really doesn't matter that much which one gets picked. If he's got an R behind his name, I think he's going down. But, you know, Democrats before have had the uncanny ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. So, you know, let's hedge our bets a little bit. Let's see if we can get the worst GOP candidate electoral-wise to be the one who wins the nomination. That'll help us out a lot. So Tommy Thompson, you know, he's one of them there. He's one of the who dats. Let me move on now to the next tier because, you know, between, you know, Gilmore and Paul and Thompson, they've got about 2/10 of a Tix Turd's chance in getting that nomination. So let's not even worry about them. Let's start taking a look at some of the better known names here. And I call these people the Guano Locos. Guano Locos, because here was the question that was asked of them at the GOP debate about evolution.
Senator McCain, this comes from a Politico.com reader and was among the top vote getters in our early rounds. They want a yes or no. Do you believe in evolution?
Yes.
I'm curious, is there anybody on the stage that does not believe in evolution?
Okay, so is there anyone on the stage of 10 GOP adult candidates who have allegedly been to college and studied science, I imagine, at some point? Out of 10 of these people up on stage asked point blank, do you believe in evolution? Three of them, 30%, three of these guys raised their hand. Nope, I don't believe in evolution. And after the debate, another one who didn't have the guts to come right out and say that he doesn't believe in abortion. Well, he came up a little later and said, well, I let you know that I don't believe in abortion or don't believe in evolution either. So four out of 10 of the men who want to lead the free world deny evolution. They believe in this biblical, crazy, intelligent design creationism thing. And, well, we'll kind of let you know which ones are which right after the break. We'll cover the four guano loco candidates on the GOP side. And if you got some more to add about that, just let me know. Just let me know at 866-5577-377. We're coming back with the four guano loco candidates.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Hey, welcome back to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ. We're blogging at RadicalRuss.net, and if you want to send me an email, you can send me an email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. And I also want to give a shout out to all the people listening on the internet through the live stream at 620kpoj.com. We've got one of those listeners on the line. We're talking about the GOP candidates, and my question to you is this: which GOP candidate do you want to see win the nomination so that Democrats have the best chance of winning in 08? And I turn to the phone lines in Nampa, Idaho, to a man of impeccable taste and eminently wise judgment, the Rockin' Johnny B. is on the line. Are you on the line, Rockin' Johnny B?
Hey, are you the Radical Rudd?
I am the Radical Rudd, and
I am the Rockin' Johnny B.
Let me clue everyone in here that's listening. This is my father, John Belville, calling on the line. And, you know, one of the things that's really important here at the Russ Belville Show is the importance of family. And being that this is Mother's Day, and, well, I got father calling in, but what the heck. It's the importance of family in America. So, you know, from time to time, you're going to get to hear from the Rockin' Johnny B. So, Dad, tell them what you think about these GOP candidates.
Well, there's one that we can beat.
Who's that?
And that's that Tommy Thompson guy.
Yeah?
Yes, because I know him personally.
Really?
Well, I knew his great-granddad.
Okay.
His great-granddad invented the Thompson machine gun. Back in the 1930s, he was instrumental in creating the firepower that took away, that killed all of the people who was making booze.
Wow, so it was part of the whole Prohibition movement back then, Thompson machine guns.
Yes, yes, the Elliott Ness and the Ness boys.
So why is it going to be so easy to beat Thompson compared to the others?
Let's face it, man, you know, that gun went out of style. He's out of style. No sweat. This is a no-sweat thing.
No sweat thing. So we'll just get top. Now, you know, here's the problem, Dad, is, America's going to learn this, that you and I are incredibly, incredibly dedicated fans of the 12-time world champion Green Bay Packers. And, of course, Thompson's from Wisconsin. He's a Packers fan.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know, even the worst guy, there's something about him you got to like, I guess.
Well, yeah, you know, those people up there in the great white north, you know, you've got to watch out for them because they spend a lot of time in the snow, and, you know, their eyes and stuff get all fouled up. Their brains, you know, the snow does things to their brains.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thanks for the opinion there, Dad. That's the Rockin' Johnny B. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it, Dad. Anybody else wants to get on the line, give us a call about these GOP candidates. We're open up at 866-5577-377. So let's go back to the question that we posed. Go ahead and play that question again. This is the evolution question at the GOP debate.
Senator McCain, this comes from a Politico.com reader and was among the top vote getters in our early rounds. They want a yes or no. Do you believe in evolution?
Yes.
I'm curious, is there anybody on the stage that does not believe in evolution?
Yes, there were three men on that stage who raised their hand to say they do not believe in some of the basics of biological science. Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas, Governor Mike Huckabee of Arkansas, and Representative Tom Tancredo of Colorado all raised their hands no. And then afterwards, Representative Duncan Hunter of California also made sure that the press knew that he also did not believe in the evolution. So after the news break, we're going to talk a little bit more about these conservatives. I call them the guano loco conservatives, the ones that believe in all the babbling biblical literalism and refuse refuse to support science in America. What's this problem with a religion and all this infection into our political system? I want to know how you think about the religious situation here in America and how it's affecting our politics. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, and this is the home for truly radical progressives.
AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Hey, that's me, and welcome to the weekend. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, and happy 24th birthday to my brother Joshua. Way to go, Joshua. You made it to 24.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. So this is the Russ Belville Show, the home of truly radical progressives. We're broadcasting from our flagship studio, AM 620 KPOJ, in Rip City, Portland, Oregon. We're streaming online at 620kpoj.com, blogging at radicalrust.net, and you can email me, radicalrust@gmail.com. Also, if you want to get involved, get your voice heard by at least thousands of people, give me a call at 866-5577-377. We're just going to wrap up our talk here on the GOP candidates, the straight old white Christian guys in the blue suits. Pick one. They're all the same for me. We just got that question from the GOP debate where they asked them, you know, whether or not they believed in evolution. And Brownback, Huckabee, and Tancredo, and Hunter, four out of the ten, all said they didn't believe in evolution. So, you know, here's the problem with that stance. You know, I don't want to discriminate against anyone for their religious beliefs, but when did the religious beliefs start to become the political beliefs? You know, when I was growing up, I was always told that, you know, politics and religion didn't mix, that your religion was something personal, and you didn't bring that into the public arena. And now, with the ascendancy of the Christian right, that seems to be the modus operandi here, is to turn America into a so-called Christian nation, impose theocracy on this nation. And this religious effect on our candidates and our politics is having devastating effects on the United States of America. I mean, think about all the things that happen thanks to these Christians. These right wingers, I shouldn't say Christians, I should say these extremist Christians who they don't believe in global warming. One right off the bat, you know, they're going to fight everything on global warming. So you can say goodbye to Miami and Manhattan and New Orleans and all these cities that are going to be deluged by the rising sea levels. They risk our young girls' lives because they want to deny them vaccinations for human papillomavirus. Because, you know, vaccinating a woman against a possible STD means that she'll want to have sex more. That's their theory there. They deny anything but abstinence education for all the women in the world, especially in Africa, where they're having the AIDS crisis there, and they deny them any funding to teach them how to use condoms or to provide condoms to them. You know, they oppose the stem cell research so Michael J. Fox has to stay all sick and disabled. They discriminate against gay and lesbian people because their Bible tells them so. They're wasting all our time and money on the Ten Commandments fights and censorship fights. And you know, the funniest thing about this to me, is when you get people who say they don't believe in evolution and they're writing it on a computer, on the internet, using satellites and servers and telecommunications. Yeah, they can accept the science that gives them the internet and accept the science that makes it possible to watch the 700 Club on a satellite. They can accept that science. But the basic science that says, you know, the Earth is 4.2 billion years old, they can't accept that science. Well, that's enough of the guano locos. I can't take those guys any much longer. We'll get to the flip-floppers in a little bit, but right now, what I'd like to turn to is this story. This is a breaking story that I thought we should get to here on the Russ Belville Show, and it has to do with former Major General General John Batiste. He was a 31-year veteran of the United States military, worked his way up to two-star general, Major General, served in major combat operations there back in Iraq, and he's been frustrated. He's been fed up with the Cheney-Burton maladministration, with their denial of any sort of support, any sort of true support for our troops, any sort of real plan to win in Iraq, any sort of real Well, just real support of our troops. That's the thing. And as a general, when you're in the military, you can't come out and speak against these problems. It's your job to follow orders. It's your job to toe the line. So he was a good soldier. He was a good general, and he kept his mouth shut. But after a while, he just could not stand it anymore. So he left his career, left his 31-year career in the military so that he could speak out. I heard him on an interview the other day talking about how he could do a better job for our troops by wearing a suit and tie than he could by wearing the uniform. And part of what he had to say in this ad that this is from votevets.org is the group that he's working with. And some of his comments, he says, you know, I'm no longer wearing the uniform of the country. I have no ties to the defense industry. I can speak honestly, and I have a duty to do so. And I know there are other generals, both active duty and retired, that are doing all they can within their means. And he's going to continue to speak out. His criticism of Bush's war strategy, he says, we went to war with a fatally flawed strategy. This is all about a president who's relying almost solely on the military component of the strategy to accomplish the mission in Iraq. Sadly, we're missing the diplomatic, the political, and the economic components that are fundamental and required to be successful. So the general steps away from his military career. He joins this group, Vote Vets. He puts out this, he's part of this ad where he's calling out President Bush, calling President Bush on the carpet. Someone finally speaking out and a voice that has the credentials to be able to speak out on this issue with regards to the military and the terrible way we've been treating the military without giving them a clear plan for victory. And so what's his reward? What is his reward for being an American hero? What is his reward for stepping out and finally speaking truth to power? Well, CBS fired him. That's right. General Batiste, after he left the military, he decided that he was going to be a military consultant for CBS News. And so he did numerous appearances with CBS News talking about the military situation in Iraq. But after this ad come out, CBS fired him. Now, it only took CBS 2 days. Just 2 days to fire this general for speaking out against George W. Bush's flawed war strategy. And it took him, what, a week to fire Don Imus? So, insulting young black women, well, we got to think about that a little bit. But boy, you can't be talking badly about the president. No, we can't accept that. You can't talk badly about the president. So they canned him. They fired the guy for speaking his mind. And this is just shameful that the corporate media, so in bed with this administration, so beholden to the military-industrial complex, that any sort of thing that even barely approaches the truth, the very just skimming the surface of the complicity of this Bush administration and the malfeasance of this Bush administration and how they've destroyed our military, merely the smallest speck of the truth, and the man gets canned. Now, here's CBS's excuse. When they talked to CBS News, they talked to CBS News spokeswoman Sandy Genelius, or Genelius, I hope I'm saying her name correctly. When they spoke to her, she says that he inadvertently violated our standards, and we and the general mutually agreed to end his consultant's arrangement with CBS News. A mutual agreement, and he inadvertently violated the standards. Well, what was the standard? What was the standard that he violated? I mean, you know, if the guy broke a rule, then definitely, you know, he should be held accountable to the rules. So they asked him, what standard did Batiste violate? And she says, this is the spokeswoman for CBS News, she says that he had engaged in advocacy. He had engaged in advocacy, and that that was against their contract. That was against their standards, is that he could not be doing any advocacy. Now in the ad, the only thing that even comes close to talking about advocacy in any way is when he says, Mr. President, you have placed our nation in peril. Our only hope is that Congress will act now to protect our fighting men and women. Well, how dare you advocate for protecting our fighting men and women? That's CBS News can't have that. We can't have people advocating for the safety of our fighting men and women. So CBS fires this guy. Fires this two-star general, Major General Batiste, with all his experience in Iraq, for speaking truth to power against George W. Bush. And they claim it's because he violated a standard for advocacy. And yet, Now, you won't be surprised by this, dear listener. And yet, CBS News is still maintaining some political consultants and maintaining some other consultants on CBS News, people who are getting airtime, who are clearly engaged in advocacy. We got people who are advocates for John McCain, people who are advocates for the surge in Iraq. There is clearly some advocacy going on at CBS News. So it's a little bit more of that selective prosecution, a little bit more of that picking the bad apple out of the bunch, so to speak, the one who speaks out against President Bush. Why, we can't have him speaking. Well, we'll take a look at these other two, these people over there at CBS News who are still engaging in advocacy, and let me know what you think about this mainstream media here. I'm telling you, this mainstream media is in bed with the industries that most want to keep us in Iraq. It's time for you to speak out at 866-5577-377. Let's talk truth to power. I'm Radical Russ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
Yeah, CBS News has fired Major General John Batiste for speaking out against the Bush administration's war in Iraq and the failed war policy of George W. Bush. And, you know, that's just quite the thing there. You get out and speak against the president, and CBS News is going to can you for speaking truth to power. You know, Walter Cronkite must be sitting somewhere in his home just sadly shaking his head at the state of CBS News now with firing a general, an expert in the field, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with his analysis of the Iraq war. Certainly, the man has the right to speak out. But as we go to the news lines here, I just got the statement here from the vice president of CBS, Linda Mason, the CBS News vice president of standards and special projects. And here's what she had to say. She said, quote, "When we hire someone as a consultant, we want them to share their expertise with our viewers." Well, okay, that makes sense to me. Yeah, we want a general to talk about a war strategy. That sounds like expertise to me. But then she goes on to say, quote, "By putting himself front and center in an anti-Bush ad, the viewer might have the feeling everything he says is anti-Bush, and that doesn't seem like an analytical approach to the issues we want to discuss," end quote. An anti-Bush ad? Has the woman seen the ad? It's not an anti-Bush ad. It's a pro-troops ad. It's a truth ad, an ad that exposes the truth of George W. Bush's failure in Iraq. What kind of analysis do you want the guy to give? Does he not have a right to have his political advocacy on the air? And if so, does this really does this really cause a problem with his message, a conflict of interest with his messages that you might hear on CBS News? Well, as far as I'm concerned here, CBS has done a huge, huge disservice to the news, a huge disservice to the American people by silencing this critic of the war. You know, there's so many of the critics of the war out there that need to be heard. And it's interesting now how, you know, they're starting to crawl out of the woodwork. We have the General Batiste here who is speaking out up against the war. And most recently now, our leader in Iraq there, the new commander of the troops, our good friend General Petraeus is out there. And General Petraeus also had some good things to say. This is part of our news segment here that we've got here at the Russ Belville Show. So let's introduce our new segment.
News alert. This just in from the Department of No Sherlock.
Petraeus condemns torture. In an open letter yesterday, Army General David H. Petraeus, the top U.S. commander in Iraq, admonished his troops regarding the results of an Army survey that found that many U.S. military personnel are willing to tolerate some torture of suspects and unwilling to report abuse by comrades. And this is from the letter from General Petraeus. "I was concerned by the results of a recently released survey conducted last fall in Iraq that revealed an apparent unwillingness on the part of some U.S. personnel to report illegal actions taken placed by their fellow members of their units. Some may argue that we would be more effective if we sanctioned torture or other expedient methods to obtain information from the enemy. They would be wrong. Beyond the basic fact that such actions are illegal, history shows that they are also frequently neither useful nor necessary. That's right, torture does not work. It has been proven century after century that torture just gets you something. It gets you any sort of answer from the person being tortured, who will just say what they think you want to hear so that you'll just stop torturing them. And so it's good to hear General Petraeus coming out and saying that.
Come on and search me, Dave Petraeus. Dave Petraeus, Dave Petraeus. He's got a plan for a wreck that's going to save us. Don't you blame us, Dave Petraeus, Dave Petraeus. The surge is going to save us.
Dave Petraeus. That's right. Dave Petraeus is going to save us. At least that's what the Republicans are hoping. I don't think there's any saving us at this point. This war has been lost for 4 years now. But this survey, I don't know if you heard about this survey that they took from the soldiers out there in Iraq. They surveyed over 1,700 soldiers, and they found that more than one-third of U.S. soldiers surveyed in Iraq said they believe torture should be allowed if it helps gather important information about the insurgency. One-third of our soldiers believe that torture is okay, that torture is a valid technique. And furthermore, 4 in 10, 40%, said they would approve of torture, illegal abuse, if it would save the life of a fellow soldier. Well, that's that 24 ticking bomb scenario where supposedly the insurgent is going to know something that's going to save lives, and we have to get him within an hour or else. Right, this never happens. This so-called ticking bomb scenario never happens. So it's one of those loaded questions. Of course, a soldier is going to say that do whatever it takes to help one of my buddies. Of course, they're going to say that. I'm surprised it was even only just 4 in 10. I was surprised it wasn't more than that. In addition to this, in this survey, they found that two-thirds of Marines and half of Army troops would not report a team member for mistreating a civilian or for destroying civilian property unnecessarily. And less than half of soldiers or Marines believe that non-combatants should be treated with dignity or respect. This is what George W. Bush has turned our Army into. Oh, you know, I was a member of the National Guard from 85 to 90. I put my hand on the Bible and swore to uphold the Constitution and serve this country. And it just burns me to see what George W. Bush has done to my military. You know, if there's one silver lining in this cloud, maybe it's that finally people will realize that the Democrats are the ones who are strong on defense. And the Democrats are always been the one who have supported the troops. You want to talk about the people who have actually been troops, the people who have actually gone to war. It's almost all Democrats. You look at this Republican administration, you're not going to find hardly a veteran among them. And the gall they have to tell us that we don't support the troops, the unmitigated temerity to come out and claim that we are treasonous, that we want to see harm come to our soldiers. That just gets me so angry. So to see that our soldiers believe in torture, and where do you think that came from, Alberto Gonzalez? Where do you think that came from, Dick Cheney? Where do you think all that came from? They're destroying our military, and we've got to do something about it. You know, I've got Krista who's holding on the line. Krista, we're going to get to your call right after the break. I think Krista has the right idea about what we need to do about this to truly support our troops. Get behind our Congress. Tell Nancy Pelosi that we need to stop funding this war. Tell Senator Reid that we need to bring our troops home now. The time for negotiations is gone. This president is a psychopath. Nothing short of brute force is going to, or at least the power of the purse, is going to bring our troops home. If you agree, call me, 866-5577-377. I'm Radical Russ. Talk to you right after the bottom of the hour.
AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Yes, welcome to the weekend. It's 33 after, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, and happy birthday to my brother Josh, who's turning 24. We're talking about the war in Iraq and the generals who are coming out late recently against this war in Iraq. I've got Krista from Vancouver, Washington, who's been hanging out on the line, being very patient. Appreciate that, Krista. Welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Thank you so much, and thank you to you and Air America for giving me something to actually listen to when I'm driving.
Oh, well, I'm glad I could help you out there. Anything that keeps people awake and not wrecking into me on the freeway, that's what I, well, I guess I'm not driving right now, so I guess I'm safe. So what do you have to say about this whole Iraq mess?
Okay. The mess is just atrocious, of course. My main reason for calling was I'm driving on my way down to Portland on a main highway in Vancouver and saw a sign that said impeach and then had Nancy Pelosi and her number. Believe me, as much as I would love to take back the last 6 years, I was underage in 2000 and couldn't vote in 2000, but as much as I would love to take back the past 6 years, it's all about putting our efforts to where they're going to be most productive. And at this point, impeachment's just going to draw away from actually withdrawing from Iraq and putting our Congress and our House and our Senate towards impeachment instead of what they're doing right now, which is really pressing to say, we're done, we want out, this is atrocious and illegal war. I have friends and family in the military, and I just want them back home.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would love to see this Congress or this presidency out of office. There are more important things to be doing.
You know, I've heard that. I've heard that, Krista. There's this weighing the pragmatic approach of, you know, and I hear from people that say, you know, we can't spend our time right now on an impeachment proceeding because it'll be a circus. It'll distract from the work of the Congress. It'll distract from getting our troops home. And then the other side of me thinks about, well, you know, if we wrote an impeachment clause in the Constitution, if it doesn't apply to this guy, who's it supposed to apply to?
Right, instead of the circus of Bill Clinton when I was in a high school and had news cameras all over
I know.
That atrocity.
Yeah.
I completely agree to that point where impeachment is, I wish I could say that it would be the most productive thing. But with 2 years left in office, how long would an impeachment take? And how much would that draw away from intended focus of making sure that our troops are home and safe?
Well, you know, I wonder about, you know, how effective are we going to be in bringing the troops home anyway? It looks as though this president is not going to react to anything but the brute force of law. And even now, he's disregarding the Constitution with his signing statements. You know, what's to stop him, you know, if, let's say, the Democrats do manage to get another bill through to bring the troops home and another bill that has timetables and another bill after that, and he just continues to veto. And even if he did sign them and then he issues some signing statement that says he doesn't have to obey the law, I mean, what then? I mean, how long does this go on before we have to bring out the big guns of impeachment?
Exactly, and at the same time, every time he vetoes a bill that we're passing through, he's cutting funding to his own troops by saying, no, I'm not going to accept this, so I'm not going to take any funding.
So it's almost as if we let him hang himself, in a sense. Give him enough rope, and he'll hang himself. He'll pull the GOP down with him as well. Is that the idea?
Exactly. The longer he vetoes the bills we're passing, the longer he's cutting the funding that we do have available, that we are willing to give for a certain period of time. He's just saying, no, I won't take any amount of funding if there's a timetable. Well, the longer he says I won't take any amount of funding, the longer he himself is cutting the funding to our troops.
Do you think the American people are going to see it that way? Or when we start looking out to the red states, we start looking out to the flyover country, you know, how well are the political ads going to convince them that it's really Pelosi and the Democrats by not giving him the bill that he wants? Don't you think they're going to spin it that way? And we're going to get painted as the weak Democrats who won't support the troops.
I sure hope that America has more logic and more intelligent people out there than that. It's really something we have to look that we aren't saying we aren't funding anything.
Yeah.
We're saying here's funding, but we need a time limit. We need to have some sense of agreement. We need to have some sense of balance.
Yeah.
We're not saying we want you out there in 24 hours or we just aren't funding anything. We're saying here in 6 months, in 3 months, in this amount of months, we want a withdrawal.
Oh.
Where we'll still keep some people over there, but we want to show some progress on our side.
Well,
because
I think
that's what the American people voted for.
I agree, and I think that's what the Democrats are doing right now. And thank you very much, Krista, for your call. I really appreciate it. I've got some other folks hanging on the line I want to get to. But what do you think? Do you agree with Krista on that? Do you think it's just impractical to do an impeachment? The way I'm looking at things, I don't think there's much else that we can do. I think it's come to the point now where, you know, I truly believe we have sociopaths running our country. We have psychopaths running our country. country. They're not going to be convinced by negotiations and political pressure and opinion polls. I believe Bush will keep doing what he wants to do, even, like he said, even if it's only Barney the dog that agrees with him, he's going to continue on his stubborn ways. So I don't see any way other than impeachment to convince this guy. Now, Mark in Florence, Oregon is also hanging on the line. Mark, do you have anything to add to Krista's comments or something else you'd like to add to the discussion?
Yeah, good morning, Russ.
Good morning.
Yeah, Russ, I had a comment in two areas, General Petraeus being one, and Krista's comment. I've heard this argument before about how impeachment would take too long or that the Congress cannot impeach and take care of other business at the same time. And if you go back to the Nixon impeachment, I don't believe it took that long. And it's really cut and dry when you come to the Bush situation, because Bush is, that administration actually is created so many crimes in its own behalf, which are attributable to them directly.
That, oh, absolutely.
I think the evidence is overwhelming, and that impeachment would probably be a pretty quick matter, and it would also bring great pressure to bear on the current policy, whether it be the Iraq war or any part of domestic policy. When it comes to General Petraeus was only echoing the actual policy that was set out in the very beginning before this war started, and that was to stay in Iraq permanently. And in order to do this, they built in planned inefficiencies, which would cost the lives of American troops and has cost the lives of American troops and also of many more Iraqis. So
yes,
actually, the Constitution demands impeachment, basically, in this situation. I don't see how we could do anything else morally or legally that would be right.
All right, Mark, thank you for your call. You win the Radical Russ Nail on the Head Award for the day. Absolutely. There is nothing else that's going to convince this guy. And furthermore, if anything, the Constitution demands the impeachment just so that these zombies won't reanimate themselves and come back in 20 years. I mean, these are the same cats who were involved in the Nixon administration. I mean, you look back to Rumsfeld and Cheney and these guys, they have ties that go all the way back to the Nixon administration. And then in the 80s, when Reagan came up, there they were again, rearing their ugly head during Iran-Contra. You got Negroponte and Robert Gates and all these fellas here who got, you know, some of them that got the pardon, some of them got away with it, never got indicted. But, you know, their hands, they were hip deep in the Iran-Contra scandal. And then, of course, we didn't take care of it then. You know, they got their pardons. They kind of slunk away, you know, hid under their rocks again, waiting to appear again. And next thing you know, 2000, they steal an election. And here they are again. We got Cheney, and we got, you know, Wolfowitz and Pearl and Feith and all these guys who've been on the underbelly of American politics since the late 60s, early 70s, and they just won't go away. If we don't impeach one of these guys or all of these guys, what's to stop them from coming back again? They need to learn the lesson. They need to know that they can't get away with it. That's what America's about. Accountability. This is supposed to be the accountability president. I want to see some accountability. Let me know what you think about this at 866-5577-377 at the Radical Russ Show, Russ Belville Show. Your Red State Refugee, this is the home for truly radical progressives.
Is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
45 after the hour, Radical Russ here at the Russ Belville Show. I'm your Red State Refugee, and what that means, well, I'm originally from Nampa, Idaho, in the conservative county in Idaho. Wrap your minds around that one. And so I moved to Oregon in 2003, primarily looking for, you know, job, you know, prospects, and just wanted to get out of a red state. That really had a lot to do with it. I found that my beliefs and my worldview were just so incompatible with the people that were around me that I would end up in these screaming matches and these arguments with people. And I started to think, you know, am I insane? I can't be the only one that thinks this way. And one thing happened this week here in my adopted home state of Oregon that has made me so proud to have adopted the Beaver State as my new home state. Let me throw it here to Oregon's Governor Ted Kulongoski.
This has been a long road traveled. It has taken patience. It has taken perseverance. It has taken our will to never give up on the dream of hope and opportunity for all Oregonians. And today, we can deliver that dream by ending legal discrimination once and for all against gays and lesbians in Oregon.
That's right. Oregon Governor Ted Kulongoski just signed two bills, Senate Bill 2, and that bill bans discrimination based on sexual orientation, bans discrimination in the workplace, in housing, and in public accommodations. And with the same stroke of the pen, also signed House Bill 2007, which establishes domestic partnerships in the state of Oregon, which are civil contracts between adults of the same sex, and establishes that domestic partners have the same responsibilities, privileges, immunities, rights, and benefits of married couples. So congratulations to the state of Oregon. You've now become the 8th state to extend broad recognition to same-sex couples and the 18th state to establish anti-discrimination protections based on sexual orientation. Now, this has been a long road for this governor. He mentioned it. Governor Kulongoski was originally in the Oregon State Legislature, and he, during his first term as a freshman legislature in the Oregon State Legislature in 1975, he introduced legislation to prohibit discrimination against gays and lesbians, and it failed by just one vote. And this is back in 1975. So since then, the governor has been a tireless advocate for the rights of gay and lesbian citizens to be treated equally under the law. Now, so far, only Massachusetts has gay marriage. Vermont, Connecticut, California, New Jersey, Maine, and Washington all either have civil unions or domestic partnerships, and Hawaii also has some limited rights that they give to same-sex couples. So it seems as if it's the New Hampshire legislature, is also poised to pass a civil unions measure. So it's looking to me like New England, the New England states, and the West Coast. That's the safe place to be gay in America. And even then, it's not really a safe place to be gay. There's so much discrimination and hatred that is fostered against our gay and lesbian citizens. And some of this is coming from, once again, our babbling biblical literalists who just cannot accept that some people like to touch their peepees in ways that they don't like. So they're going to try to fight this, of course. This was one of Oregon's representatives. One of Oregon's representatives, when they were starting to pass this legislation and have it going through the House, this was one of the things he put in his newsletter to one of his constituents. He says, "A tragic week. This past week has been like no other. On Monday, the world witnessed the tragedy of Virginia Tech. On Tuesday, Oregon witnessed the passage of domestic benefits for same-sex couples." Well, okay, so there's your tragedies. A psychopath shooting up 31 people is just as tragic as passing equal rights for gays and lesbians. Yes, that's Oregon Representative Dennis Richardson. Yes, the model of modern thought here. Well, luckily he's in the minority. Luckily we were able to get this passed despite guys like this. But this opens up an interesting question. Back in 2004, Oregon was one of the states that had one of those anti-gay amendments up on their ballot. And in 2004, the people of Oregon passed a constitutional ban on gay marriage with a 57% vote. Now, this new bill is not gay marriage. It is domestic partnerships, a.k.a. civil unions. But it does say all the same responsibilities, privileges, immunities, rights, and benefits of married couples. So is this a case of activist legislators ignoring the will of the people and just instituting their own version of what's right? Is that the way things should work in a democracy? You know, the people here voted 57% against gay marriage, and now we've just legalized a sort of form of gay marriage. I wonder what you think about that. I personally am all for it. Whatever gets rights to our gays and lesbians citizens is all good by me. But if you have a different opinion, let me know at 866-55-77-377. I'm Radical Russ. We'll catch you right after a little break.
This This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
That's right, Radical Russ here, 55 after the hour, reminding you, hey, we'll be here every time this week. You come back next week this same time, we'll be here. We'll be taking your calls. We can have a lot of fun here on the Russ Belville Show. This is not your normal talk radio show. We're always going to have something just a little bit more radical here to talk about. And I've been talking about the Oregon Senate Bill 2 and House Bill 2007 that just enacted protections for gays and lesbians in the state of Oregon against discrimination in housing and employment, as well as establishing civil unions or what we're calling domestic partnerships here in the state of Oregon. And while I'm grateful for that, I'm really a little tired of these half measures when it comes to equality for all Americans. Gay people deserve the same exact rights as straight people do. And I'm really just a little tired of having to make these verbal compromises on civil unions and domestic partnerships just because a few fundamentalists are a little freaked out about the gay people. Get over it. It's the 21st century. And part of the problem is that our presidential candidates, our leaders, the people in the Democratic Party, can't even come out and stand for full equality. They want these half measures, this little bit of equality, which a little bit of equality, isn't that a little bit like being, you know, a little bit pregnant? You know, you're either for equality or you're not for equality. And I'm proud to say there's at least two candidates in the Democratic field who are for full equality. Of course, they don't have a chance of winning, and maybe that's why they're for full equality. But, well, let me turn you over to this great statement from former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel.
If a couple of lesbians or gay men want to get married and they love each other, they should have the right to do that and enjoy all the legalities in our society that go along with that. I have no problem with that at all. I think that people who create these problems of homophobia and the likes of that do us a disservice. We are all human beings, and one of the things that should motivate us the most of all is love. So love between a man and a woman is beautiful. Love between a woman and a woman is beautiful. Love between a man and a man is love, is beautiful too. What this world needs is a lot more love than what we presently have.
Yeah, that's where we should be cueing the Burt Bacharach, right? What the world needs now. Love. We need more love. And love between a man and a man is fine. And love between a man and a woman is fine. And love between a woman and a woman, well, that's extra fine. And so, you know, we need to support our gay and lesbian citizens. It's time for full equality. Mike Gravel believes in it. Dennis Kucinich is on the record for full marriage equality. But the rest of the Democratic candidates, what is your problem? Barack Obama says no to gay marriage, but he's okay for civil unions. He's okay for the half measure. Senator Christopher Dodd says, not marriage, but civil unions. He says, well, I think it ought to happen. The country's way ahead of us on these issues. I think the American people are there. Well, why aren't you there, Christopher Dodd? Why don't you just be a leader instead of a follower? John Edwards, not for gay marriage. He says, it's a jump for me to get to gay marriage. I haven't got across that bridge. Joe Biden, he's wishy-washy about it. Bill Richardson says, on the issue of gay marriage, I'm just not there. I want to be honest. And then, of course, Hillary Clinton, the political triangulator, says she believes in full equality, nothing left out, but we better do that through civil unions because there's a better chance of getting that done. Well, maybe there'd be a better chance for gay marriage if some of you people would stand up for it and have a strong stand in support of full equality for all Americans. I'm Radical Russ. That's the way I see it. Full equality for all of our citizens. I'll always stand for that. Nothing but truth and common sense here at the Radical Russ Show. Russ Belville, I'm out.
AM 620 KPOJ believes in activism. And activism begins with you. Contact Congressman David Wu in Washington, D.C. at 1-202-225-0855 or in Oregon at 503-326-2901. Contact Congressman Earl Blumenauer in Washington, D.C. at 1-202-225-4811 or in Oregon at 503-231-2300. With your help, we can make a difference. AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.